This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We're going to be talking about the Ryan budget plan. And here with me are two of Washington's leading budget experts, Jim Horney and Paul Vandewater, both former CBO senior officials with years of experience in that capacity. We've been putting out various analyses of the Ryan plan, including an important new one this morning and one Jim is writing that will be out later today, but that he'll preview in this call. And as I think you'll find in the next few minutes, we'll be covering some new information that you may not have heard before about the Ryan plan. As Jim will explain, the Ryan budget contains tables with various types of budget numbers. These are not Congressional Budget Office numbers. The Congressional Budget Office has not issued a detailed cost estimate of the Ryan plan. And based on these tables, there has been widespread misimpression of the amount of deficit reduction in the plan. As Jim will explain, it is much smaller than commonly understood. In fact, his analysis will show that the plan is not primarily about deficit reduction, certainly not over the coming decade, but it's really much more about radically changing and shrinking the federal government while shifting large amounts of resources from the bottom rings of the economic ladder to higher up. By the way, as one example, and you may not have heard this, in staff discussions yesterday, it emerged that the Ryan plan includes $127 billion in food stamp cuts. Although there's a 70-page Ryan document on the plan, they didn't see fit to mention that in a single sentence in the 70 pages. And as Paul Vandewater will explain, a CBO analysis issued late Tuesday, focusing in large part on the health proposals in the Ryan plan, also is quite striking. The health reform law enacted last year has been criticized because while CBO found it would reduce health care cost growth per beneficiary, CBO found that reduction would be only modest. Yet CBO finds that the Ryan plan would substantially increase Medicare costs per beneficiary. Now, if you increase costs per beneficiary while reducing the amount the federal government contributes per Medicare beneficiary, you end up with a pretty dramatic cost shift, and that's why CBO found that the costs that the beneficiaries have to bear themselves would more than double. With that, let me go to Jim, then we're going to hear from Paul, and then we'll go right to your questions. First, Jim Horney, Director of Federal Fiscal Policy at the Center.
Thank you, Bob. There's both less and more than meets the eye in the Ryan plan. And this morning, I want to discuss three aspects of that. First, I want to explain how there really is much less in real deficit reduction than appears to be the case. Ryan claims spending cuts of $5.8 trillion over the next 10 years and $4.2 trillion in tax cuts, which would result in deficit reduction of $1.6 trillion over that period. But I will show how deficit reduction nearly disappears if you discount savings that are merely an artifact of the way the baseline treats funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Instead of $5.8 trillion in spending cuts, you have $4.3 trillion. And after accounting for the tax cuts, you're left with $155 billion in deficit reduction over 10 years rather than $1.6 trillion. Second, I want to explain how the plan is even more unbalanced, unfair, and radical than it appears at first glance. And third, I want to show how Ryan's long-term vision for the budget is even more radical than it appears from reading the documents he released. Let me turn to the deficit reduction first. The documents released by Chairman Ryan claim that his plan cuts spending by $5.8 trillion and cuts taxes by $4.2 trillion, thus reducing the deficit over the next 10 years by more than $1.6 trillion, compared to the Congressional Budget Office's most recent baseline projection. That sounds like a substantial reduction, although it still leaves us with deficits that total more than $5 trillion over the next 10 years. It's also interesting to note, in light of pledges made by many House Republicans to oppose any increase in the debt limit, that under the Ryan plan, the debt subject to limit in 2021 will be $8.8 trillion higher than the current debt limit. But that $5.8 trillion in spending cuts and $1.6 trillion in deficit reduction includes $1.3 trillion that does not represent savings from a policy change, but instead is merely an artifact of the way CBO puts together its baseline projections of discretionary spending. Those so-called savings should not really be counted as part of the deficit reduction that would result from the policies Chairman Ryan is proposing. Let me walk you through this, and also, as Bob said, I'm working on a paper we hope to have out later today that will contain all these numbers. So don't worry, there are a lot of numbers here. We'll have them out later. But I want to walk you through the logic here. First, CBO follows the baseline rules laid out as part of the Budget Enforcement Act of 1990. For taxes and mandatory spending, the baseline projections generally assume no change in current law. But for discretionary spending, that is spending that's controlled by annual appropriation acts, assuming current law doesn't work. Current law for discretionary funding for 2012 through 2021 is zero. That is, appropriations for those years have not yet been enacted. But it obviously would not make sense to do a projection of spending and deficits for the next 10 years that assumes there's no funding for defense, the courts, veterans, health care, and so on after this fiscal year. So the baseline rules say simply take the most recent appropriations provided and assume the same amounts adjusted for inflation will be provided in future years. This generally is a pretty good proxy for a continuation of current policy. Not every program needs to retain the same level of funding in all future years to carry out current policies, but on average, the assumption works pretty well. But there is currently one glaring and big anomaly. CBO's baseline assumes that we will continue to provide about $160 billion a year in real terms for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But it is clear that we are already in the process of drawing down the number of troops deployed in those countries. A process is well underway in Iraq and planned for in Afghanistan. The President's request for funding for the wars reflects that drawdown. CBO estimates the President's proposal for war funding in 2012 through 2021 will result in expenditures totaling $545 billion over 10 years. That is more than $1 trillion less than the amount in CBO's baseline. Now, Chairman Ryan accepts the current plan for the drawdown, and in his plan includes spending for the war exactly equal to the President's request. As a result of simply accepting the current policy to draw down the troops, Ryan claims deficit reduction of nearly $1.3 trillion. That number includes the lower interest costs that result from the direct savings in defense spending. Many budget watchdogs would argue you should not count that $1.3 trillion in savings that comes from simply recognizing we don't need to continue to spend as much as we're spending on the war today when we significantly reduced the number of troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. In fact, when the administration showed such savings in the President's budget, Chairman Ryan described those savings as phantom savings. If you take out these phantom savings, the spending cuts claimed by Chairman Ryan are reduced to $4.5 trillion over 10 years. There's one more, much smaller adjustment that I think need to be made to the savings attributable to the Ryan plan. It appears there is a mistake in the calculation of interest savings from the plan. I don't know if this is related to the error the Republican staff admitted in the markup yesterday that the Social Security numbers in the plan, shown in the tables they released, showed a $900 billion reduction in Social Security revenues and about a $200 billion reduction in interest paid to Social Security. And the staff said, in fact, those numbers should be far smaller, less than $100 billion reduction in revenues. I don't know if the overall error is related to that, but our calculations we did using CBO's economic and technical assumptions, CBO methodology for calculating debt service savings, and giving Ryan full credit for the policy savings that he's claiming, we calculated the interest savings should be about $230 billion less than is shown in the documents released by Chairman Ryan. So, not counting the apparent savings from accepting the current policy of drawing down troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and correcting the error in interest savings, you're left with a $4.3 trillion reduction in spending over 10 years under the Ryan policies. Now, how does that result in only $155 billion in deficit reduction? That's because nearly all of the spending cuts are needed to offset the nearly $4.2 trillion in tax cuts Ryan proposes. As I said, the deficit reduction is much less than it appears when you first look at the plan. But when you go on first glance and look more carefully at specific tax and spending policies, the plan is even more unbalanced, unfair, and radical than it first appears. The contrast between the effects of the tax cuts and spending cuts is striking. The Ryan plan assumes extension of all the Bush tax cuts, the estate tax deal struck last December that is so favorable to big estates, and relief from the alternative minimum tax, as well as a new tax break for so-called small businesses and a reduction in the top individual income tax rate to 25%. According to the highly respected Brookings Institution Urban Institute Tax Policy Center, just the extension of the Bush tax cuts and the AMT relief alone, not the estate tax, not the lower 25% rate at the top, just the extension of Bush tax cuts and AMT relief will reduce taxes for people earning $1 million a year by more than $125,000 a year. In contrast, we calculate, and I believe this is a conservative calculation, that two-thirds or more of the spending cuts over the next decade will come out of programs that provide assistance to low and moderate income Americans. As Bob noted, food stamps or SNAP would be cut by $127 billion over 10 years. Medicaid would be cut by $771 billion, not counting the more than $600 billion cut in Medicaid resulting from repeal of the Affordable Care Act provisions that expand insurance coverage. And both food stamps and Medicaid would be turned into block grant programs so that in the next recession there would be no additional funds available to meet the increased needs resulting from millions of Americans being thrown out of work and losing their income. Not only would this produce great hardships for those directly affected, it would make the economic situation even worse because it wouldn't allow the automatic stabilizing effect of increases in safety net spending in a downturn to operate as it should. Medicare cuts under the proposal would not be large over the next 10 years, but as Paul Vanderwater will explain, the Ryan plan proposes far-reaching changes in Medicare that would impose huge cuts in the program in coming decades, without, I would note, reducing total U.S. healthcare spending. Finally, to understand the real vision behind the Ryan plan, you need to look at the Congressional Budget Office's analysis of the effects of his proposals in the long run. As Bob said, CBO did not score the Ryan plan, but they took what Ryan said his plan would do and then estimated what the effects would be in the long run. What CBO concluded is really dramatic. Paul Vanderwater will explain what CBO says about the effect on healthcare, but I want to note what CBO said about the effects on the rest of the budget. CBO shows that the Ryan plan would shrink federal spending to about 20% of gross domestic product by 2015 and to 14.75% of GDP by 2050. That would be the lowest level since 1951, a time when Medicare and Medicaid did not exist. But what is truly stunning is CBO's estimate that spending for everything other than Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and interest would shrink from 12% of GDP in 2010 to 6% in 2022 and 3.5% by 2050. As CBO notes, spending in this category has exceeded 8% of GDP in every year since World War II. It's also the case that defense spending alone has not been less than 3% of GDP since 1940. Unless we assume defense spending goes back to the levels that existed when we assumed the U.S. didn't have to worry about being prepared to project force worldwide, this means virtually nothing would be left under the Ryan plan to fund the rest of the government. This last point on the long-term effect is discussed in a paper that we posted on our website yesterday. I'll now turn to Paul Vandewater to talk about the effect of the Ryan plan on healthcare programs.
Thanks, Jim. I will comment briefly on a few important issues in the Ryan budget relating to Medicare, Medicaid, and health reform. In each of these areas, we see a major disconnect between the rhetoric and the substance of Ryan's proposals. A few months ago, the Republican mantra was repeal and replace health reform, but the Ryan budget would repeal the coverage provisions of health reform without making any effort to replace them. Even worse, Ryan's Medicare and Medicaid proposals would actually reduce health coverage. Nowhere is this more evident than in the proposal to raise the age of eligibility for Medicare from 65 to 67, a proposal that is not mentioned in the documents released by the House Budget Committee, but came to light only in the CBO analysis requested by Ryan. Under Ryan's budget, 65 and 66-year-olds would have access neither to Medicare nor to coverage through the health insurance exchanges that will be created by the Affordable Care Act, but that the Ryan budget would repeal. Those 65 and 66-year-olds who don't have employer coverage would have to seek coverage in the individual insurance market. But people in their 60s face very high health insurance premiums or have pre-existing health conditions that prevent them from obtaining coverage at all. Thus, under the Ryan proposal, many 65 and 66-year-olds would find themselves uninsured. This is just one of the major differences between Ryan's budget and the proposals made by former OMB Director Alice Rivlin, differences that have caused Dr. Rivlin to say that, despite claims by Ryan, she does not support his plan. Ryan and his fellow Republicans have argued that the health reform legislation doesn't go far enough to slow the growth of health care costs. But Ryan has offered a plan that, by CBO's estimation, would raise the amount of health care spending attributable to Medicare beneficiaries by upwards of 40%. The Ryan plan would eliminate traditional Medicare and, starting in 2022, gradually replace it with a system of vouchers that seniors could use to help purchase private health insurance. In its recent analysis, CBO explains that privatizing Medicare in this way would increase health care spending substantially for two reasons. First, private health insurance plans have much higher administrative costs than traditional Medicare. Second, private plans are not able to negotiate comparably low payment rates for health care providers. Because the Ryan plan would raise total health care spending for Medicare beneficiaries, while at the same time reducing the federal government's contribution to cover those costs, it would massively shift costs onto the elderly and persons with disabilities. CBO estimates that in 2022, the first year that the voucher scheme goes into effect, total health care spending attributable to a 65-year-old Medicare beneficiary would increase from $14,700 $20,500, and this beneficiary's out-of-pocket costs would more than double from about $6,000 a year to over $12,000. The Ryan budget would also repeal all the provisions of health reform that hold out real promise of slowing the growth of health care costs, namely the Independent Payment Advisory Board, the excise tax on high-cost health plans, and the exchanges to the health care payment and delivery system. In the past, Medicare, not private health insurance companies, has been the leader in reforming the health care payment system in ways to promote more efficient delivery of care. For example, Medicare instituted the diagnosis-related group system of paying hospitals, as well as the fee schedule for physicians. And private insurance plans have followed Medicare's lead. the Ryan budget would, by getting rid of traditional Medicare, would abandon the possibility of using Medicare to lead the private health insurance system. As Jim has noted, at least two-thirds of the Ryan plan's budget cuts over the next 10 years would come from programs that benefit low-income Americans. And almost half of those savings would come from Medicaid. CBO finds that federal funding for Medicaid would fall 35% by 2022 compared to current projections. Ryan claims that converting Medicaid to a block grant will enable states to do more with fewer resources. But Medicaid costs significantly less per beneficiary than private sector care, and its cost per beneficiary has been rising more slowly than private sector costs. Most states already make heavy use of managed care in their Medicaid programs and already enjoy considerable flexibility under federal law. Thus, it's just not possible for policymakers to cut hundreds of billions from the program without sharply reducing both the number of low-income Americans who are insured and the coverage that Medicaid beneficiaries receive. CBO's analysis makes clear that unless states make up for the federal cutbacks, they would have to take some or all of the following measures: cut eligibility, leading to more uninsured low-income people; cut covered services, leading to more low-income people who are underinsured; and cut already low payment rates to providers, leading doctors, hospitals, and nursing homes to withdraw from Medicaid and thereby reducing beneficiaries' access to care. Low-income children, seniors, and people with disabilities would be hit the hardest since they constitute the bulk of Medicaid's beneficiaries. The bottom line is that Medicare, Medicaid, and other health proposals in the Ryan budget would not slow the growth of health care costs, which would essentially shift substantial costs to state governments and to some of our most vulnerable citizens.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.